Chapter 5. Reacher stood for a moment in the parking lot and watched Nagley through the window. She hadn't changed much in the 4 years since he had last seen her. She had to be nearer 40 than 30 now, but it wasn't showing. Her hair was still long and dark and shiny. Her eyes were still dark and alive. She was still slim and lithe. Still spending serious time in the gym, that was clear. She was wearing a tight white T-shirt with tiny cap sleeves, and it would have taken an electron microscope to find any body fat on her arms, or any place else. She was a little tan, which looked good with her coloring. Her nails were done. Her T-shirt looked like a quality item. Overall, she looked richer than he remembered her. Comfortable, at home in her world, successful, accustomed to the civilian life. For a moment, he felt awkward about his own cheap clothes and his scuffed shoes and his bad barbershop haircut, like she was making it, and he wasn't. Then the pleasure of seeing an old friend swamped the thought, and he walked on through the lot to the door, went in, and stepped past the "Please Wait to Be Seated" sign and slid straight into her booth. She looked up at him across the table and smiled.
"Hello," she said.
"To you, too," he said.
"Want lunch?"
"That was my plan."
"So, let's order, now you're finally here."
"You sound like you were waiting for me."
"I was, and you're about on time."
"Am I?" Nagley smiled again.
"You call my office guy from Portland, Oregon. He saw the caller ID, traced it to a payphone at the bus depot. We figured you'd head straight for the airport. Then I figured you'd take United. You must hate Alaska Airlines. Then a cab ride here. Your ETA was easy enough to predict."
"You knew I would come here? To this diner?"
"Like you taught me back in the day."
"I didn't teach you anything."
"You did,"
Nagley said.
"Remember? Think like them. Be them." "So I was being you being me. You'd figure I'd head for Hollywood. You'd start right here on Sunset. But there's no meal on United from Portland, so I figured you'd be hungry and want to eat first. There are a couple of possible places on the block, but this one has the biggest sign, and you're no gourmet. So I decided to meet you here."
"Meet me here? I thought I was tracking you."
"You were, and I was tracking you, tracking me."
"Are you staying here, in Hollywood?"
She shook her head. "Beverly Hills to Wiltshire."
"So you came out here just to scoop me up?"
"I got here 10 minutes ago."
"The Beverly Wiltshire. You've changed."
"Not really. It's the world that has changed. Cheap motels don't do it for me anymore. I need email and the internet and FedEx service now. Business centers and concierges."
"You make me feel old-fashioned."
"You're improving. You use ATMs now."
"That was a good move, the bank balance message."
"You taught me well."
"I didn't teach you anything."
"Like hell."
"But it was an extravagant move," Reacher said. $10.30 would have worked just as well. Maybe even better with the period between the 10 and the 30.
Nagley said, "I thought you might need the airfare."
Reacher said nothing.
"I found your account, obviously. Wasn't too much more trouble to hack in and take a look. You're not rich."
"I don't want to be rich."
"I know. But I didn't want you to have to respond to my 10:30 on your own dime. That wouldn't have been fair." Reacher shrugged and let it go. Truth was, he wasn't rich.
Truth was, he was almost poor. His savings had eroded to the point where he was starting to think about how to boost them back up again. Maybe a couple of months of casual labor were in his future, or some other kind of a score. The waitress came over with menus. Nagley ordered without looking, a cheeseburger and a soda. Reacher matched her for speed, tuna melt and hot coffee. The waitress retrieved the menus and went away. Reacher said,
"So are you going to tell me what your 10:30 was for exactly?"
Nagley answered him by leaning down and pulling a black 3-ring binder out of a tote bag on the floor. She passed it across the table. It was a copy of an autopsy report.
"Calvin Franz is dead." I think someone threw him out of an airplane.
Chapter 6. The Past, which meant the Army. Calvin Franz had been an MP, and Reacher's exact contemporary, and pretty much his equal all the way through his 13 years of service. They had met here and there in the way that brother officers often tended to, rubbing shoulders in different parts of the world for a day or two at a time, consulting on the phone, crossing paths when two or more investigations had tangled or collided. Then they had done a serious spell together in Panama. Quality time. It had been very short, but very intense, and they had seen things in each other that left them feeling more like real brothers than brother officers. After Reacher had been rehabilitated from his temporary demotion disgrace and given the special investigations operation to build, Franz's name had been near the top of his personnel wish list. They had spent the next 2 years together in a real unit-within-a-unit hothouse. They had become fast friends. Then, as often happened in the Army, new orders had come in, and the special operation had been disbanded, and Reacher had never seen Franz again. Until that moment, in an autopsy photograph punched into a three-ring binder laid flat on a sticky laminate table in a cheap diner. In life, Franz had been smaller than Reacher, but bigger than most other people, maybe 6'3 and 210, powerful upper body, low waist, short legs, primitive in a way, like a caveman. But overall, he had been reasonably handsome. He had been calm, resolute, capable, relaxing to be around. His manner had tended to reassure people. He looked awful in the autopsy photograph. He was laid out flat and naked on a stainless tray, and the camera's flash had bleached his skin pale green. Awful. But then, dead people often looked pretty bad. Reacher asked, "How did you get this?" Nagley said,
"I can usually get things."
Reacher said nothing in reply to that, and turned the page, started in on the dense mass of technical information. The corpse had been measured at 6 feet 3 inches in length and weighed 190 pounds. Cause of death was given as multiple organ failure due to massive impact trauma. Both legs were broken. Ribs were cracked. The bloodstream was flooded with free histamines. The body was severely dehydrated and the stomach held nothing but mucus. There was evidence of rapid, recent weight loss and no evidence of recent food consumption. Trace evidence from the recovered clothing was unexceptional, apart from unexplained ferrous oxide powder ground into both pant legs, low down on the shins, below the knee and above the ankle. Reacher asked, "Where was he found?" Nagley said,
"In the desert, about 50 miles north and east of here. Hard sand, small rocks. 100 yards off the shoulder of a road, no footprints coming or going."
The waitress brought the food. Reacher paused as she unloaded her tray, and then started his sandwich, left-handed, to keep his right grease-free for turning the autopsy pages. Nagley said,
"Two deputies in a car saw buzzards circling, went to check, hiked out there. They said it was like he had fallen out of the sky. The pathologist agrees."
Reacher nodded. He was reading the doctor's conclusion, which was that a free fall from maybe 3,000 feet onto hard sand could have produced the right amount of impact and caused the internal injuries observed if Franz had happened to land flat on his back, which was aerodynamically possible if he had been alive and flailing his arms during the fall. A dead weight would have fallen on its head. Nagley said,
"They made the ID through his fingerprints."
Reacher asked, "How did you find out?"
"His wife called me 3 days ago. Seems he kept all our names in his book, a special page. His buddies from back in the day. I was the only one she could find."
"I didn't know he was married."
"It was recent. They have a kid, 4 years old."
"Was he working?"
Nagley nodded.
"He set up as a private eye, a one-man band. Originally some strategic advice for corporations, but now mostly background checks, database stuff.
You know how thorough he was. Where?
Here in L.A.
Did all of you set up as private eyes?
Most of us, I think.
Except me.
It was the only marketable skill we had.
What did Franz's wife want you to do?
Nothing. She was just telling me.
She doesn't want answers?
The cops are on it. L.A. County Sheriff, actually. Where he was found is technically part of L.A. County, outside of the LAPD's jurisdiction, so it's down to a couple of local deputies. They're working on the airplane thing. They figure it was maybe flying west out of Vegas. That kind of thing has happened to them before.
Reacher said,
"It wasn't an airplane."
Nagley said nothing.
"An airplane has a stall speed of, what, 100 miles an hour? 80? He'd have come out the door horizontal into the slipstream. He'd have smashed against the wing or the tail. We'd see paramortem injuries."
"He had 2 broken legs.
How long does it take to free fall 3,000 feet?
20 seconds.
His blood was full of free histamines. That's a massive pain reaction. 20 seconds between injury and death wouldn't have even gotten it started.
So?
The broken legs were old. 2-3 days minimum, maybe more. You know what ferrous oxide is?
Rust on iron?
Reacher nodded.
Someone broke his legs with an iron bar. Probably one at a time. Probably tied him to a post, aimed for his shins. Hard enough to break the bone and grind rust particles into the weave of his pants. Must have hurt like hell.
Nagley said nothing.
And they starved him. Didn't let him drink. He was 20 pounds underweight. He was a prisoner, 2 or 3 days, maybe more. They were torturing him.
Nagley said nothing.
Reacher said, "It was a helicopter. Probably at night. Stationary hover, 3,000 feet up, out the door and straight down."
Then he closed his eyes and pictured his old friend, tumbling, 20 seconds in the dark, cartwheeling, flailing, not knowing where the ground was, not knowing exactly when he would hit. 2 shattered legs trailing painfully behind him.
"Therefore, it probably wasn't coming from Vegas," he said.
He opened his eyes.
"The round trip would be out of range for most helicopters. It was probably coming north and east out of L.A. The deputies are barking up the wrong tree."
Nagley sat quiet.
"Coyote food. The perfect disposal method. No tracks. The airflow during the fall strips away hairs and fibers. No forensics at all, which is why they threw him out alive. They could have shot him first, but they didn't even want to risk ballistics evidence."
Reacher was quiet for a long moment. Then he closed the black binder and reversed it and pushed it back across the table.
"But you know all this anyway, don't you? You can read. You're testing me again, seeing if my brain still works."
Nagley said nothing.
"You're playing me like a violin."
Nagley said nothing.
"Why did you bring me here?"
"Like you said, the deputies are barking up the wrong tree."
"So?"
"You have to do something."
"I will do something. Believe it. There are dead men walking as of right now. You don't throw my friends out of helicopters and live to tell the tale."
Nagley said,
"No, I want you to do something else."
"Like what?"
"I want you to put the old unit back together."
Chapter 7. The Old Unit.
It had been a typical U.S. Army invention. About 3 years after the need for it had become blindingly obvious to everyone else, the Pentagon had started to think about it. After another year of committees and meetings, the suits and the brass had signed off on the idea. It had been dumped on someone's desk, and a mad panic had started to get it going. Orders had been drawn up. Obviously, no sane CEO had wanted to touch it with a stick, so a new unit had been carved out of the 110th MP. Success was desirable, but failure had to be deniable. So they went looking for a competent pariah to command it. Reacher had been the obvious choice.
They thought his reward was promotion back to major again, but the real satisfaction for him was the chance to do something properly for once, his way. They had given him a free hand in personnel selection. He had enjoyed that. He had figured that a special investigations unit needed the best the Army had to offer, and he had figured he knew who and where they were. He had wanted a small unit for speed and flexibility and no clerical support to prevent leaks. He had figured they could do their own paperwork, or not, as they deemed necessary. In the end, he had settled on 8 names in addition to his own. Tony Swan, Jorge Sanchez, Calvin Franz, Francis Nagley, Stanley Lowry, Manuel Orozco, David O'Donnell, and Carla Dixon.